It was 31 years ago this month, while I was a freshman here at the University of Oklahoma, that I came to a new series of commitments in my life. I had always been a believer in terms of, you know, believing things about the gospel. I had always been a person who I think would have considered myself a follower of Christ. But it was during March of 1969 that some things happened and sent my life off in a different direction. And as a result of that, some things began to change. Some things that I believed began to change, but I think more significantly, not just things that I believed, but some actions and habits and all of that stuff that had been a part of my life for 18 years, some of those things began to be challenged. And as I began to learn a little more about what it meant to follow Jesus, at least as I could interpret that, I was challenged that some of those actions should be changing. And some of the things that I had not done, I needed to start doing. Some of the things that I had been doing, I needed to stop. And there were some other things that just needed to be adjusted. Well, one of the things that came very clear to me fairly quickly was that I had a real problem in the way I used my mouth. I had always been a talker. I was born talking. My motto had always been, if it moves, speak to it. My younger daughter, who is here, is a delight. She has taken that one step further. Her motto has been, if it moves, speak to it. If that goes well, hug it. She's like her mother at that point. Now, there's nothing wrong with being a talker. But what I began to discover was that there are often problems with words. There are problems with the things we say and in the way we say them and in the way we relate to people. When the Apostle Paul was writing the young believers at Ephesus, he said to them, "Now I don't want you to let any evil talk come out of your mouth." He said, "Rather, I want your words to be words that are proper. I want them to be words that build people up. I want them to be words that are fitting in a particular setting. I want them to be words of encouragement and grace." James was even a little more direct in his little letter when he said to whomever he was writing, he said, "You know, the tongue is a strange critter. It is one of the smallest members of the body, and yet it is enormously powerful." And he goes further to say, none of us will ever conquer it. There is not a one of us, James says, who will ever get to the point in his or her life where the person can say, well, I can move on now. I have conquered that tongue. James said that is not going to happen. Well, both of them were recognizing what hundreds of years earlier one of the writers of the Proverbs had said. When the writer said about words that they can be both very, very good or they can be very, very harmful. And the writer said like this, "There is one whose rash words are like sword thrusts, but the tongue of the wise brings healing." Now that's a pretty potent image. The writer said you can talk and speak in such a way that it is just like you're cutting somebody with a sword. They said that's what words can do. They can be that damaging to a life. Or your words can be used in such a way that they can be like a healing balm put on a sore or a cut or something like that. Well, as I began to get some things lined up and balanced, that was one of the areas of real struggle. I simply used my mouth often improperly. And while I'm not aware that I intended to do any damage to anybody, or I intended to hurt anybody's feelings, or I intended to discourage anybody, the fact of the matter is that was often happening. And it has been a 31-year adventure trying to learn how to do that a little better. And I have pretty much validated what the Apostle James said. No one is ever going to conquer the tongue. And that has certainly been the case with me. But I have made progress. And I guess when I think about the topic of, or think of the idea of how do we go about living life in such a way so that our mouths really are not spewers forth of evil and herders of people, but our mouths really can be encouragers and they can speak properly and all that. The question I have to ask is, well, how do we do that? How does that all work? Well, I'm sure I don't know all the answers. But let me make a few suggestions to you for your consideration, things that I have reflected upon over the years. First of all, if we're to alter our speech and our words in such a way so that they have a chance of being helpful instead of hurtful, the first thing I would suggest is most of us need to simply think about what we're saying. And maybe more importantly, we need to listen more and speak less. What I discovered was that I was spending way too much time hearing the sound of my own voice. Now, there's nothing wrong with being a person that talks a lot. Those are just different personalities. There's some people who are naturally quiet. There's some people who are naturally talky. That's not the issue. But it dawned on me, as the years went by, I simply was hearing me too much. And the very fact that I was hearing me all the time meant that I was not listening to others as much as I should have. And the problem with that is, then it meant almost certainly I was occasionally missing the voice of God, because sometimes where God speaks most clearly is through somebody else. And if I couldn't hear them because I was hearing me, then there was a good chance I was also missing some insights and some questions and some guidance about life that I needed from God that was now simply not a part of that realm because I couldn't hear it. Again, one of the writers of the Proverbs says that the heart of the righteous ponders how to answer, but the wicked just pours forth evil things. And I think what the writer was trying to say, a wise person listens and thinks and begins to teach himself or herself to think about what the person's getting ready to say and to ask, now, do I need to say that? And if I do, how would I best say it? Or would that just simply be best left unsaid? We need to learn to listen to other people and be a little quieter. Now, that's sometimes problematic, especially for somebody like me who's known as a talker. And I still can. I can still pretty much entertain a room at a dinner party if I need to. I've got some pretty strong extroversion, and it's not hard for me to do. But as I've gotten older, I spend an increasing amount of time sitting and listening and asking people questions. Now, that drives my wife a little bit off the edge, because she is used to the other side. And oftentimes at the end of an evening, she will say, you are so quiet. She said, you need to talk more. She said, people expect you to talk. And I said, well, the problem is that when I talk, I don't listen. And I need to listen. About 15 years ago, I was delivering a lecture at the seminary one day. And a young lady raised her hand and started asking a question. And I thought I knew where she was going with it. So I jumped in there right in the middle of her question and tore off on an answer. It was brilliant. And finished it with a killer illustration. And then I kind of stepped back emotionally to receive the body language and the affirmation from the class. The only problem was the young lady right beside her raised her hand and said, that's not what she was asking. Well, had I waited for her to ask the question instead of being so anxious to speak, I would have heard that that's not what she was asking. And sure enough, we weren't even on the same planet. I was not even on the same topic with her. Well, that was a very embarrassing moment as a classroom teacher, because I had just demonstrated I'm really not as concerned about what you are saying as I am about what I'm saying. And you only have to do that once or twice, and you begin to remember, I think I need to listen instead of talking. Same thing is true in personal conversation. I've had to learn to quit breaking into somebody's conversation and interrupting them, because it dawned on me I did that too much. Somebody would be trying to tell me something, and I'd interrupt them. And it's not only frustrating to them, it's selfish on my part because it's saying, what I'm getting ready to say back to you is much more important than what you're saying to me. So I think one of the ways we begin to work through this deal of the tongue is we say, Lord, teach me to listen. I already know how to talk. Teach me to listen. Teach me to be quiet. There's a second thing, though. Not just learning to listen, learning to be quiet. I think we start analyzing our speech and we say to ourselves, am I speaking gently? Are my words words of grace? Are they words of healing? Or do I tend to speak harshly? Maybe even vulgarly? Interesting verse, another writer in Proverbs. Proverbs 15:1. I memorized a long time ago. It's always intrigued me. It says, a gentle answer turns away wrath. A harsh word stirs up anger. Now, I'm not exactly sure all that the writer had in mind, but I suspect that what he or she had in mind was that oftentimes anger is brought on in conversation not because of what was said, but because of how it was said. A gentle answer turns away wrath. A harsh word stirs up anger. Let me ask you a question. Think of the last argument you had with somebody that was pretty warm. Maybe as recent as today or last week or last month or last summer. But think of the argument and you remember it and it was hot. I would almost be willing to bet that regardless of what the topic was, if one or both of you had been able to control the tone of your voice, the argument would have stayed under control. But boy, the minute somebody raises his or her tone of voice, the other one raises it in return. And now the dynamics change. A gentle answer turns away wrath. And I think one of the questions that we ask ourselves, men and women, is when I speak to people, do I tend to speak with periods at the end of the sentence or do I speak with exclamation points? And I believe we're to speak with periods. Because speaking with a period at the end of the sentence says, this is how I'm feeling and this is where I am with this. But speaking with an exclamation point says, and this is how you ought to feel. And if you don't feel like this, you're wrong. And probably we also ought to speak occasionally with question marks, which would say, I may not be right about this, so let me hear what you say. We speak gently rather than always harshly. I can think of three or four seminary illustrations that I can use tonight. I was teaching a class, I guess, about 10 years ago. There was a delightful guy in the class from Nigeria, just a delightful brother. And he and I were good friends. We had visited a great deal, and he'd taken a couple of other classes under me. Well, that particular day, he asked a question. And I thought of this hilarious response to make. It was sarcastic. And I didn't mean anything by it. But I said it, and the class just roared. It was a funny, funny thing to say. The problem was that culturally, there was just enough difference between him and me that he was offended by that. Well, he came to see me right after the class. And he said two things. He said, that really hurt my feelings, what you said. Well, I had not intended to hurt his feelings. I wouldn't have done that for anything in the world. But the second thing he said was maybe even more revealing than the first. He said, you know, I did not hear one thing you said after that. Well, men and women, when we use harsh words with people, sometimes we are building walls that we don't even know are there. But people begin to stop hearing us or wanting to hear us if our voice is characterized constantly by sarcasm and by exclamation points, when it's to be characterized by gentleness. 3 or 4 years ago, one of the classes I was teaching got into a fairly hot discussion on a current topic. I think it was, women in ministry or something. And, people like to argue about that at seminaries. And some of the brethren and sisters were expressing more heat than they were light. But this one young guy from Texas, who I knew was extremely conservative, and I knew exactly where he was going to come down on that position, and I knew it was going to be different from where I was. But he stood up, and in about 30 seconds, he laid out his beliefs. But he did it with such grace, and with such gentleness, and with so well-precisioned words. And it was humble. And by the time he sat down, everybody there knew exactly how he believed, what he thought, but he had not offended anybody in the class. And it was a wonderful example of being able to speak our convictions gently rather than obnoxiously. And to be able to speak our mind with grace rather than with a barb. Well, about a year and a half ago, I had a young lady who was working for me as a grader, and she's a great student. She's going to be a fine scholar. She's at another institution now pursuing another degree. And I asked her if she would do a lecture for me on a particular topic, because I knew that she had done more work in that area than I had. She did a lecture, did it really, really well, but right in the middle of the lecture, she used a street term that everybody else in California uses on the street. It's just vulgar. And probably 2/3 of the class wasn't offended, because people in California tend to talk like that. But about 1/3 of the class was, and I could see it. I could see their shoulders. I was sitting back behind them, and I could see several of them bristle. And I thought to myself, she just lost her audience. She just offended them, and they're not going to hear anything she says. Well, when she came to my office later and we were evaluating the session, and I was able to give her all kinds of positive feedback because she's bright and she was so well prepared and everything. But the last thing I said was, I said, let me raise an issue with you. I said, when you chose to use that particular word at that particular time, I said, first of all, it wasn't needed. There were any number of other synonyms you could have used. I said, secondly, as soon as you did that, about 1/3 of your audience shut you off and did not hear another word you said because you offended them. And I said, you know, communication's tough enough anyway, whether we're up in front of a group or whether it's just two people sitting on a couch. It's tough to communicate. None of us can afford to offend somebody else by being vulgar or by using an improper word. And we live in a society that is increasingly vulgar. I mean, that's all there is to it. And I'm not puritanical, trust me. But I'm having to constantly look at my own vocabulary and try to sort it. Because even though a lot of it's quite proper in California, it doesn't matter. Our words are to be words of grace and words of gentleness, words of encouragement. Well, there's another thing. Not just learning to listen and maybe being quiet, learning to try to speak words with gentleness. I think we need to understand that while words can be destructive, they can be very, very helpful. And we need to try to ask, how can I speak words that are helpful? You know that verse I quoted to you a while ago out of Proverbs? There's one whose rash words are like sword thrusts. But the tongue of the wise brings healing. Both parts of that verse are important. I have a friend who's a few years younger than I am. He's one of the most successful people I've ever known. Everything he has ever touched has turned to gold. I mean, this guy has never done anything that hasn't worked in his life. He told me, though, a few years ago, he was about 40 then, I guess, he told me, he said, you know, when I was a little kid, somebody, I don't remember who it was, a parent or somebody else, got angry at him and in a moment of anger said to him, you are nothing but a stupid kid. He said, you know, that drove itself so deeply into my life. He said, I've never been able to forget that. He said, in some ways, I think I've spent the last 30 years trying to prove to myself that I'm not just a stupid kid. Men and women, words can hurt. They can absolutely devastate. And we need to be careful with them. But now the good news is the other side of that verse. Words also can have great power for healing and for encouraging and for helping people want to go on. Let me close by suggesting this to you. There's a lot of things we can say about life. But one thing I think that's true about life for most of us is that life can be tough. Sometimes life hurts. I mean, there are some things that can happen that just flat hurt. Sometimes there are faults. Sometimes there's somebody else's fault. Sometimes there's nobody's fault. But boy, life can hurt. And I don't have to tell you that. Most of you are already old enough that you've taken some pretty good shots in life. Most of you know what it's like to have your hearts broken or be disappointed in somebody or to have health problems or to have severe financial problems or to have family problems or something. You already know that. Life can hurt. Well, because that's true, then there need to be people like you and me that are running around trying to help. We already know life hurts. We don't want to be adding more hurt to it, but instead we want to help. And if words can help, then good night, let's use them well. Let's encourage, let's strengthen, let's uplift. And for the last 30 years, with more or less consistency and more or less success, I've tried to make it a practice that whatever else I was doing, to try to speak words of encouragement to people. Because I know life is tough. And I know for many people, they may be wondering, do I want to do this anymore? And I'm sure there are many Christians who wonder, do I want to keep going with this? And so every chance that I have to either orally or with a pen and paper to speak words of encouragement to somebody, I try to do that. You know, when I find out one of my colleagues at the seminary, when some student says something positive about his or her class, I make sure I tell that professor. Because you don't always get that kind of feedback. So I make sure I say to him, hey, I heard a good word on your course the other day. Students were telling me how meaningful it was. If I hear somebody say something good about somebody, maybe a student at the school, I'll stop them in the hall and say, hey, I was talking to somebody the other day, and she's pretty impressed with you. Thinks you're a pretty good woman. Because I want them to know that. Because life can be tough. And I don't want people to be only discouraged. I want them to be encouraged. 3 weeks ago, about 50 of our seminary students pulled off an outstanding missions conference for college students in the West, where they worked like crazy for months. Well, the last thing we did after the conference was over, 2 weeks later, we had a big blowout, had a big wing ding with pizza and desserts and all of that, because I wanted to say to them, hey, men and women, you did well. Thank you for that. You did really, really well. When I see the good thing about being an encourager with the mouth is that it's not a matter of gifting. I've never understood spiritual gifts anyway. I really don't. I think I have them all, and I don't think I have any of them. I mean, I'm very confused on spiritual gifts. And I read all these little inventories, and I think this guy needs to get some sleep. This is not a matter of gifting. It's not a matter of talent. It's not a matter of intelligence. None of those things matter. What it is a matter of being sensitive enough to say, Lord, how can I use this maddening little critter up here behind my teeth, how can I use that as a help in people's lives rather than as a hurt? How can I be a person who speaks words of grace and words of gentleness? How can I be a person who thinks before he or she speaks and tries to decide, what do I say, or do I need to say anything? Now, the good news there is that regardless of your gifting or your talent or your intelligence, if you do nothing more than be a person who can speak words of grace, you can be a person who helps change lives. I'm absolutely convinced of that. Because there are a lot of people who are discouraged and for whom life is not going well. And many of them don't think there's anything about them that's really that valuable. And it could be that the greatest ministry you would ever do is to take the time to say to somebody, hey, you know, I've noticed this about your life, and I really appreciate that. Well, I would recommend that to you for your consideration. Let's pray, shall we? Our God, we all have enough failure stories to tell in the areas of using our mouths and our tongues. We don't need to tell any more of those. They do help us to be at least tolerably humble, and we're grateful for that. If we can't be people who do anything else well, help us to be people who speak words of grace, words of gentleness, words of purity, words of encouragement. I thank you for these men and women, and I pray that you will slowly and properly and effectively add this particular tool to each of their lives that they might live better. In Jesus' name, amen.